understand.
Okay.
All right, so we're here for a work session, overview of the five-year construction program and planning process. Darren Moon. Darren, thanks.
Since we're holding a work session this time, the task we've held is part of the actual board meeting, but we thought we'd break it out for a little more extensive discussion this time. Instead of what I'm here to propose the draft five-year construction program, go through a couple slides on why we do this. First, it's required by Iowa Code Section 309.22. We need to submit a five-year construction program to the DOT by April 15th of each year. Some general rules we follow when we put this together. The programming of projects should be based on the amount of money available to spend, so it should be realistic. The DOT does have to approve this when we submit it, and if they do see it's not, they will send it back and say try again. They have the right to do that. Ideally, projects enter the fifth year and then kind of work their way up into the accomplishment year, which is the next year in the program. The first year we call it the accomplishment year. New paving projects, that's where you're paving a gravel road. They must meet a paving point criteria, or you have to hold a hearing for the public to come in on if they think it should be paved or not. And lastly, the road system that the project is on may determine what type of funds can be used on the project. It's either local, farm-to-market, or federal aid.
In fact, we've got two this year that use two different ways, right? The right. Paving north to Gilbert is all local dollars, and the paving of 600th is all farm-to-market.
Grant, our only choice was local dollars. 600th, we could use farm-to-market or local dollars to pave. Some of the factors in selecting the projects, the current condition of the pavement or the structure, the age. We have the biannual bridge inspections, which we're just getting wrapped up. We will not have that report here for another probably a couple months, so I won't have the details of that, but they informed me of some high priority things that I've been sending the board emails on. The system that's on, the average daily traffic on the road, safety concerns, cost, development in the area, and can it be repaired without complete replacement? And then our funds available. Our first step in this whole progress was to establish our local budget. This was last year's FY17. We said the three projects there. We're currently going through the FY18 process. I do want to point out a couple changes even since we had the preliminary approval of this. We have nine projects. Staniel Trail and 300th Street are both federal aid bridge projects, and that's why you'll see the special dollars over here. This is the federal aid portion, and we have to match that with 20% local funds. There's another issue that's popping up this year. It started a year or two ago with the federal government, and this is another reason why we want that funding swap to happen, where federal funds will be local funds in the future, so we don't have to deal with things like this. It's called fiscal constraint. When it comes to the federal dollars for bridges, there's a big pool that comes to the state, and each county gets a sub-allocation of that. For a while, the feds were saying we weren't spending enough of that money because we had a balance left over, and that's mostly because sometimes bridge projects are hard to develop and get all the proper permits and everything. So there's always a balance there, so they wanted us to start using that balance up. So we started doing that, and now they've done a 180, and now if they want fiscal constraint, you have to program exactly what's going to get spent, or I don't know what the consequences are, but the DOT had to come up with a review process, and in that, we all have to submit our five-year programs, and then they review all the counties and see how the dollars fit, and then they go back to counties and say, you got to take this project out, this project out. So what's going to happen here, as I submitted these already in our system, it already has told me that this 300th Street project pretty much can't get programmed in FY18 because of the fiscal constraint issue. This one even draws a flag, but it it puts us real close to the limit, so hopefully I can still get that submitted. But I'm going to have to pull this one out of FY18 because of that fiscal constraint issue. I had this one in there for a potential federal aid grant, additional, what's above and beyond what these federal funds are. It was a special box beam project they're working on. Let me see if there's another way I can still try to apply for that, but that's unknown right now. So I will be taking this out, but I also need to comment on the one, number six here. This is as a result of our bridge inspections. They found that one concrete abutment bridge was deteriorating really quickly, so we wanted to get in the program as quick as we could, so we put a real quick cost estimate together. I'll get to that a little later on why, but that's going to end up costing a lot more than that $130,000, so I'll get to some reasons later.
Darren, I can't find in my handouts a print copy of this, correct?
Oh, correct. Yeah, this is part of the local budget that we've already went through. I didn't print that out again.
I just want to make sure.
Correct.
I had another question about the swap from the federal to the state.
Yeah.
I had someone make a comment to me that the concern going that way is that it could do away with Davis-Bacon. Is that correct? The requirements?
It doesn't do away with it. What it does is take the county projects and moves them to the state. So there's just as much money being spent. The state uses the federal aid process for all their projects. So it will essentially spread the Davis-Bacon wages to the state instead of the county. And the state's everywhere. So I know there's concerns that it would move where those wages were getting paid, but the state does projects pretty much in every county. Mm-hmm. So that they're still going to be spread throughout the state. But, yeah, that was one of the biggest concerns on one of the biggest reasons. That's why it hasn't happened up to this point, because we did speak and wage issue.
Okay, thank you.
So moving on, this is the format that it must be submitted to the DOT, and I did not print that out for you because it's kind of hard to follow. I put it in a little easier format for you to use. This will be on our website this afternoon. So if you want to pull it up and look at it, we put the draft map and program on there.
It's already on.
Is it? Okay.
Yep.
So this is the format I put it in. It's a little easier to follow. That's hard to read, but you got the handouts in front of you. It's split out into roads and bridges. So this first section will be roads. I'll point out on the left side, if there's a program year in that column, that means it's in the draft program. Beyond that, where there's blanks, that's kind of our wish list of what we'd like to see done. But that's what's already in the program. So I'll just kind of start going through those. You already know the 2017 projects. I just left those in there. Grant, 600. R-77 and E-18 are both overlay projects that were let last month. Those are already in progress. Now starting with 2018, number 5 there, we have 530th Avenue, University South to 260th. I think before I get into the project details, let me go through a couple more slides here. That's a little difficult to see. Hey, Tyler, can you hit the lights up underneath that speaker?
Sure.
That'd be easier to see then. Thank you.
Yeah, the purple doesn't show up real well on gray, does it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It used to show up better than that. This is the age of our pavements. We have PC pavements and HMA pavements. The PC roads last longer. We estimate a 40-year design life on those and about 20 to 25 years on HMA pavements. PC Road, that's 1980, is our oldest PC road there, and it goes up to 2010. We did a reconstruction of 13th Street in 2010. And then the ages of the HMA, if they're yellow, that means they're already in the submitted program. But I put some of the oldest ones we have out there to give you an idea what's coming due. So we got North Dakota, which we're doing in small maintenance stretches to overlay North Dakota north of Ames. E-18 is that peculiar one. It used to be a DOT road. That's one we had the rumble strip issues on it. The rumble strips kept getting wore off in 1 year. but the road is lasting well. They must put a really thick section down when they paved it last. But beyond that, I put them in order of age. There's just a couple short roads around Story City that we'll probably need to add before too long. But the ones that were added new are this S-27 south of Highway 30. And that's only, 14 years old. And I'll get into some of those issues later on why that's coming up so soon. This is an important slide as far as what we need to be spending each year on pavements to keep up with our current pavement system, just to maintain it. This is just the general average here. We have 36 miles of PC pavement at a 40-year design life. We need to be reconstructing just under a mile per year on average. HMA, we have 166 miles, 25-year design life. We're finding that's closer to 20 now, which I'll get to. About 6.64 miles per year we need to be addressing on average. So putting the dollars, 0.9 miles. Now, $400,000, this is for the PC portion, an estimate. That's not for creating a new PC road. That's right. For addressing an existing PC road, putting an asphalt overlay on it, but they typically have to be a bit thicker. And then about 250,000 mile for HMA. Average those out, you need to be spending just over $2 million a year just to maintain what we have now for payments. In general, what do we have available to spend each year? We get $1.2 million in FM funds. And just as an estimate, I take 25% out of that for bridges. That leaves us with $900,000 a year in FM funds. SPP is our federal aid paving dollars. We get $535 a year. That's a bit uncertain. And we also have the funding swap, which may happen, which will allow us to spend that on more roads. So we need about $2.02 million, and we are getting about 1.4 from these sources. We can put some local dollars into that, which we didn't used to have. With the fuel tax increase, we have a little bit more local dollars to work with than we have in the past. This is a new slide that just came out through SERPA. What this is coming from is we have a road rater. They drive this vehicle over that rates the roads. It's pretty much the roughness of the road. You see all these, the red is the very poor roads. These are towns. You can get by with rougher roads in town because you're not going 55 miles an hour. So kind of just look at the county section at the bottom down here. That gives us a comparison, how we compare to other counties. We have a little bit of the very poor and then up to the yellow. But in general, our very poor roads, Boone County and Polk County are the only ones really better than us. Boone County just they have a lot of PC roads. Apparently they're in good condition. But this is just another tool we use to determine which roads are the worst in the county. But this is how we compare to other areas. These are the paving projects that are in the proposed program. These top four are the ones that are already let in FY17, so it's the ones down here, the new ones that were added. Now let's get into the specifics. We can get back down to 2018, number 5, the 530th Avenue University paving, 0.75 miles. Here's University, south of Highway 30 in Ames. That'd be this stretch right here that would connect into the roundabouts right up in this area. And it would stop right here.
Can you show the pointer again where it stops?
Yeah, right at the intersection of 260th.
Okay, thanks.
So that is using, this is it's a farm market road. One of our needs you'll find later down at the end of this, the road section is to pave the rest of this 2 miles down to E57. That's something that was in the program many years ago before we upgraded South Dakota, which is over here. That used to be pretty narrow with no shoulders. Wasn't the safest road, but we totally reconstructed it, and we felt like that was taking some of the pressure off of this, so that's when that kind of dropped out of the program. But for the time being, we're looking at doing the 1.7 miles of paving.
Number six.
May I ask, just sure. Stop it again? Because you talked earlier, you showed a slide about that if there's not a pavement connection, if it doesn't connect to another pavement piece, then there has to be hearing and things on it. So, so we do have some that are going to just end in gravel and take a turn on gravel.
That paving point computation doesn't necessarily mean it has to connect in another paving. It takes into account a number of ADT, closest parallel routes, stuff like that. It actually doesn't have anything for connecting to another paving in that calculation. I was just thinking of that. But,
I misunderstood. Thank you.
This one meets paving points without having a hearing because the ADT is quite high.
One of our highest, isn't it?
Yes.
We're talking traffic counts.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, it's another acronym we don't. So that's a good time because my question was, you know, of all the data you provide us, and it's substantial, the one thing you don't talk to, I mean, in a way that I think is easily consumable, is the fact that how traffic counts move you to make determinations on paving.
Correct. You'll see that over to the right side there, and that spreadsheet shows the traffic counts, and that's a big determining factor in the paving. But like I said, we have paving new roads in the past 15 years, so that we've had those ADT counts quite high for that long. We just haven't had the funds to be able to address them. But we've had 400 to 500 ADTs on gravel roads, and that's very difficult for us to maintain.
Often do you go out and seek refreshments on those numbers?
Those are done by the DOT.
Their schedule is?
Every 4 years, they kind of do a semi-count every 2 years, but it's based off of formulas and stuff. But they actually do a physical count every 4 years. And our last one was just done in 15, I believe. Yeah.
Okay.
So the question is, and I don't mean to move us all the way to specific projects right now, but it looks to me like we've got both paving 530th all the way south to E57 and paving 260th over to R38 in this program. Would we really need both in this program, or is that one of the things we're going to talk about?
No, that's just kind of a continuation of our wish list of the past. Yeah, those were two options we've talked about in the past, so I left them both on here. But, yeah, I think probably one or the other, probably not both. Moving on to number six, that's West 190th. That's the Winery Road, Prairie Moon Winery, out by the Ames Country Club. That it's never officially been paved. It had a research project done on it where we did a treated base about a foot thick, and then we just seal coated on the top. That's why the seal coat lasted, because we had that much of a good base on it. It needs to be over. That road is just getting more and more traffic all the time. It just needs a good overlay. But it's also,
is it going to continue to get more traffic if, in fact, we close the long bridge right there across the stump?
The business section at the very beginning might, but that's just a pretty short stretch in there. The rest, probably not so much.
Okay.
But it's also a good example of a road on why, when we pave a road that's gravel, why we bring it up to a paving standard. That one was not brought up to a paving standard, so now we're struggling with safety issues and traffic counts getting higher, and there's not much you can do with it when everybody builds up to it at that point. And the next one's number seven, E63 Collins. Now that's just a straight overlay project. It's a pretty long stretch, 6 miles. The last time, it's 20 years old, but the last time that was done, it was done with a very thin 2-inch, 1 lift of asphalt. So we did get a very good life out of that 2 inches of 20 years. So that's a good thing, but it's just due again. And I would point out with that one in particular, number seven, I show it as 2019. But the more I thought about it, it shows up as yellow on the 5-year program map here. I'm considering bumping that up into 18. Just the sooner the better we get to it, and it's farm market funding that we have the funds there. Might as well go ahead and bump that up to 18. Next one, number 8. That's the Hickory Grove Loop.
this kind of broke out into two sections because the north-south,
I guess I'll point to it back here. If you know where the Hickory Grove Lake Loop is back here, the north-south stretch is farm to market. The rest around the lake is a locally
funded road, so it's going to be more difficult to come up with the funds to do that. But that's
getting to be one of our older payments, and we have a lot of like bike events and stuff out there that don't like the bumps in the road. But it has PC underneath, which is why those bumps come up through, so it's difficult to deal with. But it needs to be added to the program that is in 2021 at this point. The split between local and FM dollars.
R38 Slater, this one might be a little surprised to you why that's in there so quickly, because it's only about 10 years old. Back when we did that first phase, we were very restricted on dollars, so the section we used in the pavement section, I won't say thin, but we tried to get by as economically as we could. It's starting to show some rutting, and it's starting to crack in the wheel pass, and that for that road in particular, it's concerning, so just wanted it to be on the radar that that's probably going to need more of a strengthening lift.
We did that when? In 2009?
That was 07.
That was in 07.
And we did the bike pass all the way on both sides on that too, so that the cost was to be higher because you essentially add another third to the cost to pave those shoulders. So I wanted to point that out, why the cost is what it is.
Here, do you have an estimate, just asking for an estimate, mm-hmm. about how many roads would be like this R38 Slater to Kelly that the thinner layer to save money? I mean, how many roads do we have out there that are not going to really give us 20 years?
That one was pretty unique. That was a total reconstruction. We don't do that very often, so we don't have too many like that.
But the other issue I'm going to get to here next is, it's a good question because R77 north of Roland that we're doing this year, that was the first cold-in-place recycling project we ever did. And what that is when the existing surface gets pretty rough like this, they go in and mill up about 4 inches, mill it up and shoot some new asphalt in it and lay it back down, and then we put a new lift on top of that of 3 inches. We're finding after 20 years the wheel paths are deteriorating much quicker than if we don't do the cold in place process. So R77 was the first one we did, and that was 20 years ago, and that one's getting in pretty rough shape. We're not getting the life out of them we were hoping to. And we did a lot of those folding places, especially the next few years after that. So I'm kind of warning there is we're going to have our asphalt's kind of going cycles. We hit a bunch at one time, so they're all going to come up due here, I don't know, 5 to 10 year time frame. So kind of need to have that money available. This is S14 south of Nevada, S27. South Nevada also looks real similar. They were done in 03 and 04, I believe, with the cold in place process. Just last year, we went and did crack filling. It's the first time we've done that. Usually, crack seal, where you seal that joint on the top so moisture doesn't get in. This, they actually just dump the sealant down in the cracks and try to fill it up because there's a big void underneath you don't see. It kind of cracks from the bottom up. So there's a bigger void underneath you don't see. So we're trying to extend the life by doing this crack filling. It's not very pretty on the road, but I think it's needed because once you get that moisture down in those cracks, it really accelerates the deterioration in the road. We've kind of went away from cold-in-place recycling the past, I don't know, 5-6 years or so to get a little more idea on how long these other ones are lasting before we kind of jump back into it. But this is something the whole state had been doing about the same time we started and really liked it. But 20 years is about all we're getting out of them.
What kind of savings does it give us to do it that way rather than go in and do a full overlay, a normal rip out and overlay?
Well, the idea is, one, you get these transverse joints that get really rough, deep, so you just kind of hit those, pound on them. The idea is that kind of mixes that up to tape that joint up, because you just overlay it, the crack will come back through sooner. That's one of the reasons we did the cold in place process. But when we did them at the time, that 4 inches of recycling cost about the same as 1 inch of new asphalt overlay. So we felt like we were getting bigger bang for our buck at the time, kind of a comparison. So it wasn't a terribly expensive process. It's just
right, but how long would we expect the 1 inch overlay to last?
If we just did the 1 inch overlay?
Yeah.
2 inches is about the thinnest we can go on an overlay just because of aggregate size, but we got 20 years out of E63 down by Collins, so that alone we got 20 out of.
Yeah.
It depends what the road looks like before you overlay it, of course. And there's a lot of variation there, but. Moving on to the last one that's in the proposed program would be S27, and that's some of these pictures here on why we're starting to add those in. The projects beyond that, number 11 on, are all kind of our wish list projects. Start in on those. Number 11 is 560th Avenue North. Actually, number 12 is a related project. North and south of Highway 210. It's down here. Got a slide of that. This is Huxley, of course, and the portion of this is paved up to about here already. That Huxley paved when they annexed this area. So one project would be paving this. Kind of the road does kind of a loop around here where the old railroad bed was. So I think it's also proposed to try to straighten that out and add a new culvert or bridge through that area.
For the trail to go under?
I don't know if it would go under. The trail could still go over the top, but there's a big ravine where that loop is, so it'd have to take a culvert or a lot of fill to fill that in.
That's
why that project would be a little more costly in the estimate. But the portion of that you can see is half Huxley, half county, and then it's all Huxley, and then it's half a little bit all county here. And then the other section is down here, 1 mile, connects into Polk County. Polk County paved this quite a while ago up to the Story County line, so their pavement just ends. But we do have Interstate a half mile one way and Highway 69 1 mile the other direction. So that's a locally classified road for us, and so we'd have to use local dollars to pave that. Number 13 on the list is 220th Street.
Which is 13th Street.
13th Street. I don't have a picture of that, but I think you know where that is. That's connecting 13th Street here out to the co-op. Number 14 is 260th Avenue. That's one we already discussed, south of Ames. It's either University all the way down, or take 260th over R38. Number 15 is South S Avenue, south of Nevada here.
1 mile of paving.
Right here, and we're getting some more development south of Nevada here on Country Club, which might put a little bit more pressure on that. And this has always been our wish list with what the DOT had planned. That kind of fell through. We don't know what the future plans are, but that would also put more pressure on South S Avenue cutting across, depending on what the DOT does. Moving on.
If anybody would like pizza, I don't know that we got enough for everybody to get full, but we got enough that anybody who wants pizza, go ahead and get some.
Second sheet, number 16, 180th, US 69 to Dayton. That's up here between Ames and Gilbert. That's always been on our wish list, especially since we did that Skunk River Bridge replacement out kind of by McFarland. But the terrain through here would be very difficult to do, and 20 years ago they tried to do this and could not get the right-of-way. It takes so much additional right-of-way because of the terrain through there to cut back the hills. They couldn't get the right-of-way from the property owner. Boone County Line, number 17, south of Lincoln Way. Okay, I have a picture of that. That's something that might get taken care of by the city of Ames, because they're
keep developing closer and closer to the county line road, which is right here. This is the old drive-in theater area. This stretch of road is actually the city of Ames.
Well, they're just annexing what is George Bledsoe's property.
Yeah, they're annexing this, put apartments up. But I think their plan, they dead-ended that road they just built real close to here. I think that's going to be pushed through at some point. We do have a bridge right here, a small wood bridge that was just recently posted in the past month. But if it is paved, that'll have to be replaced anyway. So we can get by with the posting on that one for now.
You have noted in your comments possible future Ames project on that, but you haven't had any conversations with them at all.
They've indicated for a number of years that they would like to connect that. We haven't had any detailed discussions other than that's their goal.
Okay. Just that. Okay. Thanks.
Number 18, 510th Avenue, extend seal coat. What that is, this is that area over in Squaw Valley. We're replacing this bridge this year. This is the bridge we'll talk about later over to Squaw. That paved road curves and goes north and ends right here at this subdivision access. There's been some development out, a couple of really nice houses in this area have requested to extend that seal coat. We're overlaying this next year, so if we want to experiment with overlaying that a little bit further, that's something we could do at that time, but it'd be local dollars. We probably wouldn't take it up into these curves because you couldn't need a paving standard on those curves. It could kind of create a dangerous situation with speeds. Number 19 is 170th. That is the horticulture farm north of Ames. Straight east of Gilbert. That was our highest traffic count road for a number of years. It's dropping off a little bit. I think there's maybe a little bit less students going out to the Hort Farm out here. We regraded that road 2-3 years ago, I believe it was. Kind of narrowed it up. It was just so wide. Rumor has it the DOT paid to regrade that road for paving 25-30 years ago, and they couldn't come up with the funds to actually pave it to help Iowa State out. So we eventually had to narrow that back up because we couldn't maintain a road that wide. It was just covered in potholes. It's held up pretty well, the traffic, since we did that regrading, able to establish some crown in the road. Number 20, we're up to 110th Street in Story City. This is just a request I had. There's a lot of development going on up in this area here in Story City. This is the road that they're requesting to be paved. There's a lot of construction storage areas and stuff up here, so it gets a lot of construction traffic. Something I told them I would add to our wish list with, again, a locally classified road. Number 21 is R77 extension at the Heart of Iowa Co-op. That would be, this is where E29, R77 intersection is right here. We have 1 mile, a level B road currently right now, and then 2 more miles where there is no road on the section line, and the co-op down here. So that would be the idea to extend that through. I did turn the floodplain on to give you an idea why there probably hasn't been a road there in the past, because of that. It's a really wide floodplain through there. Rough estimate there of the $6.2 million to do that. I agree it would be a great connection to get this farm traffic down to the co-op rather than have to come over here to S-14 and squeeze under that railroad underpass and have to go through town and make that right turn on Lincoln Way. Next would be number 22, 530th Avenue. E57 north to 260th. We've kind of touched on that one already. That would just be the additional 2 miles all the way down to the Kelly pavement. That is farm to market. Number 23 is 505th.
That whole stretch is farm to market there?
Yes.
Okay. It's got some elevation issues when you get all the way down?
It does. It has a somewhat newer culvert down there that has a bend in it. We'd have to probably extend that out right in the hilly area. That'd get a little more expensive grading-wise. But
500 Fifth Avenue north of Cameron School Road,
that is our development area here. Again, back to the Squaw Valley area, go around the curve. That would be this stretch here. That's the new development.
But again, the decision on the bridge across the Squaw would impact.
Correct.
Darren, and I actually was out there driving that road last week as I was looking at the bridges on 190th.
Sure.
And I realized that other than the farmstead in at the curve in the upper left hand,
there's this one.
Right. There's only one driveway that accesses onto that. The developer has the Cameron Estates. Accesses on Cameron School Road.
And that was our goal. We actually did let them build, I think, two new accesses off of here to access a couple lots they couldn't get built into their interior roads. But yeah, our goal is to generally bring them off on all onto the subdivision roads and then extend that onto a paved road, but we just couldn't get that done for a few lots. They do have a couple of new driveways off of it. That
actually shared driveways.
They are. We made them be shared. So it can maximize the lots we serve with two drives. I would point out, we do have a house here, a house here. The house here, I think, is getting bought out by the developer, but there is one more house here. And then there's a hidden house way back up in here, a newer home. Those are the lots that would be affected if we did any type of closure or paved. And then lastly, the Huxley Road. We had discussions about this recently at board meetings. New development proposed in this area. Paving out to that. There's a possibility of annexation out there, which we'll probably put that paving under the developer's expense. That is it for the road section. I would see if you have any comments or maybe open it up to the public.
Well, that's what I'm going to suggest is, before we move on to bridges, because I don't think anybody's here to talk about bridges, let's talk about the roads a little bit. Let's make sure we hear from those that are here today and what they're going to advocate for us to do. But questions for Darren before we ask to hear from anybody else.
You know, we've had a chance to look at this, and he's done a very good job of bringing us to this point. So I would love to hear from the public at this point.
Okay. Or anything?
I agree. I'd love to hear it from
John, you, Craig, whoever's coming up from Huxley, and then Dan, we'll hear from you. Sure, absolutely. Let's get one in. Kind of talk in the direction of that little square microphone just so we have.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Yes. Okay, maybe this will be better. How about the money? With the
Is that your
you
cover?
You get something?
So what?
Is that where you're going to start with
that? Not me.
Leanne's bringing something back. We'll take our time to get this.
Get a piece of pizza. I have a crunchy salad.
Yeah.
Leanne, you are so resourceful.
Oh, shoot.
We're good. I'm not good.
Good afternoon, actually. It's still good morning.
You're in the afternoon now. John, thank you for coming.
Thank you for the invitation.
So John and I have visited a couple times. John and Craig and I have visited a couple times now down in Huxley about some of the things that they've got going on out here. And so I encourage John to come up and visit with us today, and I'm so appreciative that you did, just so you can fill in the board on what's happening along this stretch. And so to start with, this is 560th north of 210th.
This is the curve that Darren was mentioning earlier with the box called the Boxy Line. This is hard bottom trail.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So right now you got a big, it's got orange dwarf. What is it? It's a big
Nitwich
beetle right there that you can see from the interstate.
Right here.
Okay.
And this is forklift and spec buildings out there. And in the past, we had asked for the county to take a look at extending 560 south of 210 because that's the Delaware Street hookup in Ankeny. And a lot of traffic is continually going up and down, making that connection to avoid the traffic on 69 and the hassles of the interstate on the off ramps. This is owned by Don Bryan Holly. It's called Blue Sky Commons. Currently, there is a business looking at putting in a 20,000 square foot building into the park. There is another company that they are talking to that has 30 acres of ground that they're going to develop, close to a quarter of a million square foot building, $25 million ground project. With all that going in, it's becoming more critical to get 560th paved, to get traffic flow north and south, getting employees to the work site getting product from the community, and he's also developing an interior bikeway into the development. Every lot will have access to that internal bikeway, which then in turn will have a hookup to the Hard Bottom Trail.
What you see here, this cul-de-sac, is purely conceptual. It doesn't exist at this point in time. But Mr. Van Hollen believes that he's got great frontage here along the interstate for this roughly 30-acre user that, as John said, would invest in several capital. About a quarter million square feet, a couple hundred employees, probably double their employment in the next 10 to 15 years. And while that's not a done deal by any stretch, part and parcel to that project coming together is in improving this roadway back into Huxley, as well as moving to the south, down to Delaware and Ankeny, as John has mentioned. So we think this is really opportune. We think it's a critical piece. It's a piece. It's not the game changer or the deal maker, but it's certainly a piece of putting that pretty sophisticated project together to make it.
Also, Don has, I guess, a 75-lot residential subdivision off to the west side of it. He will have a small lake and other amenities for the project. He's given it a lot of thought, and the people that are looking at locating there like the layout, but time and time again, they have mentioned the improvements on 560.
So much like the research park or any West Des Moines type business park with those amenities and bike trails and walking paths and things of that nature. Mr. Van Hollen envisions the same thing here, which ties into a pretty nice wooded area and then has the benefit of that great amenity they call the Hard Bottom Trail that sits just north of the property. And so there's a lot of things coming together here that makes it a pretty attractive place for this company. Much of the reason why Ditch Witch, Warren has built this facility there along the interstate. And there's also still room here yet at this hypothetical cul-de-sac here for more investment here and here in this area as well. There's another 30.77 acres here, and there's 30 acres up here that will really handily crossing our fingers that this will work for the project.
As I'm looking here and seeing, because it's in color, the map I'm looking at, so I see a pretty significant stand of trees running through the middle of this, of that section that you're looking at. Right. Okay.
Proposal stand.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. This, if you think about driving down the interstate towards the Hudson Interchange, this is a little more scrubby, you know, it's a little more open, mm-hmm. almost looks like a pasture with some trees. This is pretty condensed here, and that's why the amenity of the lake that Don wants to build down here that would be overlooked by this facility here as well as this facility here, and then there's another lot here as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Darren, for you, when's the last time we did traffic counts? Because I have to believe, well, we've got 110 on the north section and 50 on the south section. I got to believe it's higher than that right now.
That would have been the 2015 numbers from the DOT. That'd be the latest we have on that.
Okay. Yeah, because I just, the traffic there at 69 and 210, is unbelievable, and I think people will do whatever they can to get around that, especially with the growth of Delaware down south and Angus.
But the condition on that road, I mean, when 69 was being worked on, you shut it down, forcing traffic over to this road to bypass it. You know, people liked the convenience of it, but they didn't like the condition of it.
Right. All right, so you guys are proposing that this be a priority for the county, and it looks to me, Darren, like you've estimated this as a $2.6 million project, two projects, but $2.6 total for all of it. So if this is not farm to market, it would have to be local dollars. So a couple of questions. One, are there grant opportunities? Two, it mentioned something about a cost share with Huxley on part of that. John, I'd like you to address that. And just see how could we put together a $2.6 million project if we were going to put it on our list.
And I think, you know, the sharing, once we get into those numbers, that's Huxley's interest in getting us just as we were down here when we did the paving in its entirety. Mm-hmm. We have that interest as well as done it this time.
Where are your actual city boundaries right now?
Okay.
Darren, you had a chart up there. No, this isn't it, but he had one. It showed us. So gray is Huxley.
Oh, interesting.
Laura, you're looking at, so here's Polk County,
uh-huh.
and you're looking at this straight north,
okay.
that first street.
Yes. Right.
Straight north to First Street, and so you can see a lot of shared, one little spot is all county.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for that. Yeah, but you kept them all connected, even if it looks like a multiple jigsaw puzzle. Okay, thank you. Thank you for that.
Evaluation of the ground out here. You've tiffed some of this. What would your plans be for the rest? And are you tiffing at 100%? What would your plans be out there in terms of what kind of growth we could see?
Well, depending on the conversations with Don and it holds true to what he's talking, you're looking at better than $30, $40 million worth of valuation. It is all urban in the area. We tip the initial phase, and it's working just fine. We've got capacity based on new growth to use those dollars for the expansion and the improvements. Because and I'm sure, Darren, you folks don't install water and sewer.
Right.
So we have those dollars on top of the dollars we're talking about this year.
100%. My only question, you and I talked about this in your office, really want to make sure that we've got some kind of agreement that there will be, we will see some growth, assuming that some of these projects go,
we will see some taxable growth out there, and it won't 100% of it be eaten up in TIF. Right. Not to say that some percentage could be eaten up.
Right. Right. The big project is likely to be TIF, but there's at least one other project that Mr. Van Hollen is family tire picking at this point in time that would provide some decent value as well.
I know that, John, you had mentioned this road to me months and months ago, and as I was out there knocking doors and meeting people, and honestly, I would bring up this situation. Obviously, I didn't know anything about your growth, your plans here for it, and I got reaction, positive reaction from residents even who did not drive down to the metro area on a regular basis, but their neighbors had shared with them about the need to have another way to shoot through Ankeny, despite being so close to both the 69, Highway 69, and the interstate. So I do want to know that there were residents, there were people out there who were aware of a need separate from this development.
Well, what we think is kind of neat, too, is that it really sets the table for additional growth to the south, for the Huxley community. You know, it's logical that people want to front the interstate, and so as that's improved, you've got opportunities long-term through this area here as well.
And the piece that sits this side of the intersection, the farm owner here has hired a consultant to put together a development plan for his section of ground. So a lot of things are just now starting to move forward.
Did you, coming back to the question about TIF, and John, I don't remember, you and I have discussed TIF before, but does your community normally TIF at 100%, or have you done projects to this point that have been at like 50% or 75%?
We've very seldom do 100%.
Okay,
thanks. We've done 75s, we've done 90s, we've done 50s. Short
3-90
term periods, those
kinds
of
stuff. Okay, thank you.
And the school appreciates. Okay, what else do we need to know? Other question here. Marty, questions on this?
Now, we always tend to talk up here about what the Ames-Nevada corridor will be, but I mean, this is writ large because this is how Story County gets to Polk County or vice versa. It just, this is a story that's been public consumption for some time now. It's just a small piece of that.
Well, Blue Sky Commons is trying to take it. You know, we've marketed that 80,000 square foot building that sits out there now. We've called it a spec building. Mr. Van Hollen has things in there from time to time through his John Deere dealings. But things are really starting to get some velocity right now for this park. So this is an exciting time for Huxley and that corridor down by the interstate.
Darren, any SERPTA or any dollars that we could look at assessing for something like this?
Well, the only type of grant funding I'm aware of is the RISE funds, and this would be a city application for RISE funds if the development's in the city.
So would you be willing to go after RISE here? And how would you want that calculated? So what I'm suggesting is that if we can come together and figure out a way to get this in our project, that you guys would go after the RISE and we would take that off the top, and then we would clearly the county would need to pay for what's south of 210, right? That's all. That's 100% county. But then we're talking about splitting everything to the north of 210, any work that we do. Would you be willing to utilize the RISE grants to take down the total and we still split it?
As long as RISE allows.
As long as RISE allows. Okay.
If it were project-specific for the project, that may be more challenging, I would think. But know that. Darren, do you have any input on that? I mean,
it's already saved up to it.
Not here. Mm-hmm. We might get assistance from RISE to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't say yes or no, but I don't know if we could apply a project, the RISE project here, over here.
Okay.
I don't think there's an opinion on that.
But we can count on splitting everything from 210 north to First. We'll split that with Huxley. Okay.
No.
John's been
But you get to tip it. But you get to tip it. So John, if you want us to tip it, then we'll talk about it longer.
John knows the worst thing to say is no, and I think he just said no.
What else do we need to know for our consideration of where this might fit in our plans?
I can't think of anything else we need at this point.
Anything else you guys want to share?
No, if in your outlook into the next 5 to 10 years, if you get to see 560 and extending up to Oak Bend Road and coming back in across the north, doesn't have to necessarily tie into this project, but as taking a look out into the future, does that start to develop as well?
Is that the one that's by Iron Bridge?
No, that's not
as far north as that.
Okay, thank you.
Mike Huxley beat us there.
What's that?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I look at that and I think the way you guys have the way of doing things is just like, well, that's a couple farms later and you're already there and we already paved it for you.
Okay.
That doesn't hurt to ask.
Thank you. Any questions for them before?
Yes, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dan, are there any other projects that you want to mention?
I mentioned two, and Darren's already covered those, but I would reiterate our support for 530, the extension of University Boulevard down to the Blacktop. We think that's a logical corridor for expansion based upon the traffic is rolling into the south side of Ames to the research park. We think that's critically important, and I appreciate Darren bringing that up. At the same time, Marty mentioned the 600th north and south from the tracks on the east side of the co-op up to 220th, and then back to the west, back towards Interstate 35. We are really confident that's a logical corridor as this annexation comes together, both for the industrial areas of Nevada and Ames. This is going to be a logical corridor. Frankly, we'd love to see the DOT put that new interchange on 30 at 600. You know, we don't get to decide that, but we think that's a logical place based upon the amount of traffic that's going to be going across Lincoln Way with the Stover for the DuPont site elastic production facility, and at the same time any further development to the west from 590. DuPont's on the east, on the west side is the area that's being considered for annexation. We think that's a very logical place to land with the first project to occur, closest to Lincoln Way Energy and DuPont. With the rail siding that Lincoln Way has already invested in, that's a pretty likely amenity for something to occur there. We know there's been a lot of discussions with Lincoln Way since they're a landholder for opportunities in that area. And so we see this as a logical, really a regional park, if you will, between Ames and Nevada. And those two industrial areas coming together, that's a logical north-south down to 30, up to 220, which is ultimately 13th Street over in Ames, and pressing back out to the interstate. It gives us a nice loop in addition to just the Lincoln Lake loop.
Which is going to turn into an industrial driveway.
Yeah.
If you have your
really
place.
Yeah. Really.
Can you speak to, at 590, as I'll just use the... that's Holos Corner. They're that great.
580
there. How do you guys feel about that? Do you have no plans to... You just would leave it as an open rail access north-south? You got any...
You know, I mean,
as it moves into the Ames sphere later this spring, I mean, you know, as we talk about these expansions and whatnot, I mean, you only have to go a mile to the... east, and you sit there and see a dirt road to a dead end of that intersection. I mean, are you going to leave that? I mean, any discussions had to the point where you guys would be entertaining closing that at grade?
I think there's a better chance that we need to put a railroad to want to close that road before we will.
Okay.
Now, in full candor, there's the logic of putting almost 500 acres together for a pretty significant mega site for a project.
Okay.
We don't have one of those in our pocket right now. I don't see that coming, in part because a project of that size might need 800 people. And we don't have 800 people right now. We all know that. But I do think that it would be naive to suggest that 580 will always be open. I think there's a good chance that if rail traffic really increases in that corridor, maybe you can put some yard out there. They've never said that to me. Mm-hmm. But if they put a yard out there to help with some of the traffic of rail cars, okay, they might insist on that. Or they might insist on an overpass. And we all know those costs. Mm-hmm. They're a lot of money. And so I think if that were to be closed, I think we'd have to have that interchange at 600 on 30. 600 has to be approved to 220th, and 220th turning into 13th Street has to be greatly improved before it would be fair to anybody to talk about closure of 580. Long term, you can see a project that covers that whole corridor from basic to country landscapes down to 590 down to DuPont. It's an awfully big project. Yeah. And we don't swim in those ponds very often for projects of that magnitude. But I think that's something that's going to have to continue to be part of the conversation, is what happens to 580 as things continue to develop along that corridor.
Just a suspicion I had that might come to that. Yeah. The fact that when you talk about the rail access, and you're going to be doing just in the co-op alone blocks, 600, quite a bit themselves, and let alone what might come to us in the future, might be doing the same or worse.
Right. Yeah, and I think our organization, I won't speak to the city names, but this is an assumption that, and the city debate, I won't speak to those folks either. There's going to be have to have a very candid conversation about where those interchanges go. Mm-hmm. There's been talk about an interchange more westerly down towards where Caremely is located in the general area. Okay, fine. Then where does that go? Hopefully, where does that go? Does it go straight? Does it meander like they proposed here 18 months ago? And at the same time, down 600, does that satisfy the industrial need? I think so. Does it satisfy the native community? I don't know. And so those are the kinds of conversations we're going to have before there's any conversation about, hey, let's go side A. That's a whole different conversation. And we need a project that takes us to that point to have that conversation. We're not there yet.
Okay, so I heard you like the rationale of 560th North into Huxley and what's happening with Blue Sky Common. You really appreciate the possibility of 13th Street all the way over to 600th and what that might create. I heard you mention University going south out of Ames down to the Kelly Blacktop. You got a feeling one way or another, Dan, or maybe no feeling, which project in that area makes more sense, all the way University all the way south to the Huxley Black or to the Kelly Blacktop, or cutting over in front of the Iowa State farm on that's 260th, isn't it, Darren?
Yeah.
On 260th, getting over to R38, which is South Dakota. Do you want those? I'm wondering, I don't see a way to do both. I don't see a way to do both of those. As an either or.
And I guess my question to feed into this, Rick, since you're more in tune to what's happening out there at the Tedesco Park, is the 260th Avenue to R38, is that still being considered as the route also for maybe taking the trail?
Well, Mike Cox, Conservation, has looked at getting the trail from the research park south to 260th,
mm-hmm.
and then I don't think it was ever the intent. I mean, if it was a connector across 260th to R38, I don't think that's a long term, because even though those bike lanes that we put on R38 are better than nothing, mm-hmm. they're not a lot better than nothing.
Right.
And the whole goal is to have bike lanes that aren't on a busy road like that. So I think, Morris, it would just be temporary if there ever was a plan to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, if you don't have a feel on those, between those two.
I want my feedback from the university on that, too.
Yeah.
I think they're both needed, but neither one of them are approved right now.
Right.
So
the traffic, though, north-south is surprising, but the geography's not good.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at what the travel goes on a pretty modestly capable road, that you can see why you would be pushing to do this. But the thing is, do you dogleg it off to R38, or do you take it all the way down? It's either or.
Yep. Dan, thanks. Anything else for us?
Thank you for consideration.
Absolutely. Yep. Okay. So, now before we talk about roads anymore, let's talk about bridges.
I made a mess. Just keep on talking.
You warned us if you were a candidate to spill stuff.
I did.
You did, too. You
guys keep on talking. I'll be back.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Rich.
Don, I'll call you and let you know where we end up. Indeed. So we won't make any decisions today. We're going to talk through kind of what we see, and I'll let you know where it's headed. And then, Darren, when are you coming back to us for approval on any of this? It has to happen by mid-April, right? When are you thinking of doing it?
Well, I think I'll come back to the board in later March, and then final approval will be in April.
Right then. So I'll keep you guys posted, Greg. What's what kind of conversation we have and how things are looking?
We didn't have a signing sheet for this, did we?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. All right, Bridget.
Okay, just a couple of quick facts about our bridge system. This might get a little outdated. Once we get this next bridge inspection cycle done, we'll update these numbers. But we have approximately 200 bridges greater than 20 feet long, and then another 76 less than 20. That 20 is the federal definition of a bridge, anything over 20 feet. They range from 13 feet long to 410 foot long is our longest.
Where's that? What's 410 feet long?
That'd be our last Skunk River Bridge, Cambridge.
Okay.
The sufficiency rating, there's 50. That's just another rating factor the federal government uses to rate the bridges. If you get less than 50, that's when they become a concern. And 80 are posted with load or width restrictions. Includes 74 listed as structurally deficient or functionally obsolete. Structurally deficient is where they mostly load posted, that type of thing. Functionally obsolete is narrow, height issues. Just functionally it doesn't meet the needs. And we currently get $337,000 per year in federal bridge funding.
Which is one small bridge.
Yeah. This is just something from the Washington Post I pulled out last year, showing the red areas are where the worst bridge issues are, the most dangerous, they called them. But you can see we're right in the heart of the red area. And you've seen this slide before, the age of our bridges. We've got a good 100, 150. These are the age of wooden building bridges. And then another, 75 or so that are the old concrete steel, which lasted longer, but this whole group's coming due for replacement about the same time, unfortunately. We're making some ground here, you see, and I think you'll continue to see that go up, but we've got a lot of work to do. Still have 132 wood bridges. That's where all the wood bridges are. It's just a decision the county made. You go over into Boone County, I think they have very few wood bridges at all. But these are the difficult ones for us to deal with. Most of our load-posted bridges are the wood bridges.
They were cheaper for the county to build at the time.
Correct. And there was a lot of labor right in that time period to build them. Just to give you a feel of the last 20 years, what we've done, the blue dots are the full replacements, and the yellow dots are the substantial repairs to bridges. This was about 110, 120, I think, we've addressed in the past 20 years in one way or another. So we've hit a lot. Just some of the repairs we do to try to extend the life on these bridges, splice in a new pile when one gets bad, and put some mortar grater blades on the side to hold it in place. The concrete repairs we're doing on a lot of them. We're doing some delineation of one side or the other to get it through as long as we can, and then the load posting. What do I do when I look at what bridges to add to the program? First, we'd like to have a farm-to-market system, first and foremost, that has as few load restrictions as possible. This was from a few years ago. You can see the purple dots are the load-restricted bridges on the farm-to-market system. If they had a yellow dot, that means we're about to replace it soon. This is what it looks like today.
A lot better.
Better.
Say that again, Laura. She's busy cleaning up over here. So that's what it looked like a few years ago. Load-posted bridges on our farm-to-market system.
And then now, and these four in the middle are already programmed for this upcoming year. Well, we've already replaced them, actually.
We still got some issues on the east side of the county.
Yeah, and I would point out a couple of these, we've done some substantial repairs to the piling and stuff. Some might actually drop off of this list with this last bridge inspection cycle. We replaced stringers on this one and did some piling repair on that one, so they might actually drop off the list anyway. A couple of these other ones I've added into the program, which you'll see come up. But this is a major Skunk River Bridge up here on 150th. That's going to be a costly one, and that's been in our program for a while. That's just a small wood bridge that we've repaired, and that's going to be a difficult one to replace, and I don't think it's causing too many issues right now, so we're going to probably put that one off for programming anyway. I know that's difficult to see, but that's our load posting map. Zoom in a little bit on the north and south half, just to give you an idea. The ones with the numbers are the ones that are load posted. And this map is always on our website if you ever want to look it up. That's the south half of the county. So let's get into the actual bridges in the program. Again, if there's a number, actually all of these, both sheets have numbers, so everything on the list is in the proposed program at this time. We do have a wish list I'll get to afterwards, but those are kind of ones we're thinking about possibly closing, but we'll get to those last. Starting out, we have one carried over from 2017. That's the West 190th Bridge we just let last week. Second one, 590th Bridge, Fox Culvert, Milford 22.
Why is that when it's peer, I mean it's twin on 580th with the Farm Marker Road? Why would that be a local road? If you go back and you look at last year's,
it shocked me because this is in the neighborhood.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say 580th? I meant 590th.
No, that's I'm saying 590th. What, didn't you replace one on 580th last year?
Yeah, down here.
Correct.
And yeah, and that's a farm to market road. Why would not a out in the country? Why would two roads that are parallel farm access not be farm to farm market farm?
I've got that map in here, probably towards the end of the presentation. Let me see if I can pull it up quick. It's a little hard to see.
Because I've never understood the process, how we designate.
Yeah, so it's just route. So if you have one, you don't have another one 1 mile over.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. A little hard to see, but the darker roads are the farm to market routes. So in that area, this is the 13th Street extension. So the mile north, east-west is actually a farm-to-market route.
Can we move that?
It's a possibility.
That's what, that's 220th? No, that would be...
That would be 210th.
That's 210th is for a Peach Street.
220th.
Okay, all
right. We can attempt to do that. The issues would be you got to have connectivity, so you'd have to take it all the way over to S-14, which that one already does. You just bump that down.
Why would you not be able to connect to 600 as it comes north?
You could do that. You'd have to take another mile off the system somewhere else, and we're getting really limited on the miles we can take off because of that connectivity issue.
Yep.
See these little mile stretches on the ends? That's because they connect into a farm-to-market road on the budding county.
I see.
The farm-to-market review board won't let you take that off. That'll cut off connectivity, and Iowa Code says you need to have connectivity.
All right.
This area is a little difficult to see what's farm to market and what's not. Because 580th is.
Okay. Well, that
is. This is 590th. This is the one.
Right.
And that is not farm to market. It's about a 3 to 4 mile grid is what the farm to market system is.
I see. Thank you.
And that's where I'm saying if we can get that farm to market system in good shape bridge-wise, we at least got major routes every 3 to 4 miles you can get through without load restrictions.
Right.
Back up. So 590th Box Culvert, Milford 22. That's one that we're actually letting next month. So that'll get done yet this fall.
And so we'll put in one of our big, nice culverts there, right?
Yes,
correct.
And I'll point to them. This is all the bridges in the program are on this map. That's this yellow one right here we're on right now. just show you a couple of quick pictures of that. This is that one I was underneath when the gator went over. Doing a fully loaded gator. That's a picture of the bridge. It has a big district tile that goes underneath it that we're relocating when we do our culvert project. We don't want to put the culvert on top of a large tile. Number three, Sandhill Trail Bridge. That's this yellow one right here. That one really needs addressed as soon as we can, and that's another one we might get caught on the federal fiscal constraint issue. I have it in the program, but they could come back after we approve the program and say, no, you have to take it out. Hope that doesn't happen. That's this bridge here. It's currently under design. And
okay, so spend just a minute talking to me about this responsible. So we've got dollars in the program, but they're saying we can't use them because why?
The dollars that get programmed have to match what is available perfectly. In reality, there's going to be a big percentage of those bridges that hit an environmental restriction or something and don't get let. So the bottom line of the whole thing is we're going to end up with another pot of money, a pool of money that doesn't get spent because of this. Seems to be the latest thing the Feds are on is this fiscal constraint with everything, just making sure you're fiscally bound to the money that's coming in.
So they've given us the opportunity, and I think they still do in Farm to Market and a few places, that we can spend and go into a negative balance.
Correct.
So you're telling me they're not giving us that opportunity to program to spend to a negative balance?
Yeah. Our state rules with the association, we can borrow 3 years ahead, but this new federal restriction will put a damper on that.
And so if the state undergoes this transition where all federal dollars go to the state and we get all local, is that going to make this go away?
Yes, the problem will go away, so then we'll be able to...
Then we'll have the money and we'll use it how we see fit.
Yeah, because the state already looks at everything that's programmed and makes sure we have enough money to do it, but the feds are making them go one extra step that... It's frustrating.
Yeah. And would the feds, as part of this fiscal constraint, would they allow a county to say, we're planning on doing this bridge, and if dollars work out such that there's not enough in this program to do it, we would fill the rest with local dollars and still allow us to keep it in? Because I'm like you. I don't think the reality matches what they're saying. Because we put so many things in the program that for whatever reason don't get done. I mean, we're dealing with it already this year on 190. We fully intended to get 190 done in the last construction season, and we're just getting that out for bids right now.
Yeah, and it's a statewide thing, so they're going to look at everything on a statewide issue, and if they see things programmed higher than what the dollars coming in are, they're just going to start picking off who's ever, I think, borrowed ahead the most, start saying, okay, you got to take a bridge off and work their way up until they get fiscally constrained. But we all know all those bridges aren't probably going to get less. Huh. So, but okay. That's the way it's going to work.
Okay.
Yeah, look, this funding swap, I don't know how soon that's going to take place. So if that happens, it would free up a lot of this stuff. This is the bridge. The issue is it has steel beams underneath. It's hard to tell they're steel, but they are. The outside ones in particular are rusted to the point. They have holes in them. So this one needs addressed fairly soon. Number four is 250th Box Culvert, New Albany 21. Number five is one of those that popped up in our bridge inspections. This is that Lincoln 13. This is one that had you can see the age of the concrete. It's about 100 years old. It's deteriorating, but these fresh cracks are what were concerning, and the deck had even shifted a little bit. That's what we've got on a three-month inspection right now just to make sure it stays safe. This is one I was referring to much earlier about the cost is increasing. We originally just sized it based on the existing structure, but we ran the hydraulics, and it calls for a triple box.
Huh.
That raises the cost, and the skew is what really gets costly. The alignment of the road extends that out to it's probably twice as long as it would be if you were able to go straight across. It really lengthens it out when you go you got to match the skew of the existing stream. So right now we're weighing putting a bridge in there instead of the culvert. The culvert just doesn't fit well on a skew that tight anyway. So any type of bridge at all, you're talking $300,000 probably minimum for a bridge. So it's in the program programmed, but if the board wants to look at this area and think about possible closure, it's an option, but at this point we're going to continue forward with the design and see what we come up for a cost.
And so you're telling me there's no opportunity to change the route of the stream to have it cross the road as we need it to cross the road?
It'd be pretty, you'd have to go way back in here and take it down, and it skews for such a long distance, it'd take a long time to catch back up to it. And there is there's a percentage, you can only shorten a stream by 20% in length, according to the Corps of Engineers and the DNR, and we haven't ran that number yet, but I don't know if we'd be able to meet that.
Can you pull back from that just to show us who lives? I mean, looking at the traffic count on these two different bridges, 10 on one and 15 on another, honest to say the least. I mean, who's in the neighborhood?
There's very few people. Yeah, there's one house just, you can kind of see it on that's the bridge right here.
Uh-huh.
15 vehicles a day, I think there's one house only on that whole mile. There is no road here, or it's level B, I can't remember. It's level B, so the road curves and heads south, and there is one posted bridge on the county line.
You know, you move out of Story County and you see these roads, you know, we call our level Bs our dirt roads, right? Mm-hmm. And you have some, you know, you have about to go into Hardin County, you see they have seasonal roads, and they sign it to say that we're not going to maintain this in the winter, you're out there, you're on your own. We've not done that as a county, though.
We've level B, but not. We haven't done the maintenance side, like winter maintenance. There's some counties that don't plow roads. We haven't gone to that level yet. And we don't plow our level Bs, but some people just have roads they don't plow that aren't level Bs.
And their rationalization is to do that.
They probably have less traffic in some of those areas that do it. Very few people travel it in the winter. Fewer and fewer homes. We did a study, I don't know, 15 years ago on plotting all the homes on, see if we had less than one or two homes on all what miles of road, and we had very few roads that were good candidates for closure.
Basically taking all of those to level B.
Yeah, yeah.
Anywhere you found that we didn't have somebody living or that was on more highly used road, we kind of pulled back out of the system.
Yeah. We are seeing more, you know, farmsteads out there that are going vacant, and so that's changing over time, so maybe we could look into that again and see if there's roads that make sense.
I agree that, you know, the county in some places is repopulating itself. You know, we thought it was a slow, gradual walk away, but, you know, there are some places that are quiet and likely to stay or get even quieter.
So do we need both these bridges? I mean, they both, there's no, at 10 and 15... There's no way for our system to survive without one of these bridges, because they're both right there in the same area, right?
Correct. And you're not even seeing the other bridges in between. There's a pretty good stream that comes through that whole corridor. So we've got posted bridges in between those two. I had that slide in my last board report. I don't think I have it in this report. It kind of breaks down just that area, but. That's something we can look at. Maybe at the next meeting I can bring that, just study one area and see what makes sense for that area.
113, just in my recollection, has many more homes on it than 120th. And just one guy's opinion, but I think that's, if you were to look and pull back and start seeing building sites, I think you'll see a lot more there.
I just like it looked at.
Yeah. I'll bring that back at our next meeting.
Okay.
So we're up to number 7. 280th, this is Collins 2. The picture here. This is actually the smaller, there's two bridges in that area. This one was programmed, but we're going to look at replacing this with just a pipe if we can get through the floodplain issues. But the bridge we're adding, is one that has this issue. It's a concrete deck, and the edge of the concrete's breaking off. We had two of these. This is one I showed you where we actually repaired that one. The one in Collins 2 doesn't. You can see the steel sticking out. The steel was actually rusted off on the Collins 2, so we had nothing to hold the concrete on. So that's the issue with that one. What's the ADT on that one?
30.
But there's two postal bridges right next to each other, so that
it gets more important.
Cutting off access to the farm in the middle.
It is.
Yeah. We may be able to do the smaller bridge with maintenance crews if we can get just a pipe in. That's why that's not in the program. This is for the bigger bridge. Number 8 is 300 Street Bridge. This is the one that needs to drop back a little bit. And I already dropped it back into 2019. It wasn't 18 under the local budget. This is that one we were going to try to get the box beam federal grant on. But because of the fiscal constraint, we need to drop this back a year. But that's a picture of the bridge. It's one of our old arches. It's been patched with wood. Some spots.
Yep.
Number 9, 690th Culvert, Lincoln 5. This is not technically considered a bridge. It's a box culvert, but we had an issue with it this past year where it got undercut. It's difficult to see, but the floor was gone, and it sucked material underneath and created a big hole in the top. So it's just time that one needs to go. We like to get rid of these ones with the head walls anyway for safety reasons. But this is right after our repair. That's why it's got new rock on it.
Can we pull that one forward? So you just told me we pulled 300 from 18 to 19 because of the financial constraints. Can we pull that 690th up?
The issue is at this point, to be in 2018, you almost have to let it now because that gives them. We do have a survey, correct? Yeah, we have a survey and we've started design, but you pretty much have to let anything right now to build it in 2018 because they got to get the box culvert made and the contract period goes through the whole construction season. It could get built next spring. We could let it more in the fall, but you're still dealing with the construction period is in the summer. So to bump it up into 18 right now is a difficult thing to do. You're almost a year and a half out, unfortunately.
Yeah, and so what I'm looking for is I'm looking if there is a project that for whatever reason we have most of the work done, it's going to be a relatively straightforward project that we can pull forward. I'd like us to discuss pulling it forward and finding the dollars to get it done. So we've got 6 bridges in next year's program, which is enough, but when you're behind, I like trying to see if we can pick off one more or two more. And so if there's anything in there, Tyler or Darren, that we is possible to pull up, let's get it pulled up, or at least get it pulled up so that we can discuss whether we want to get it done.
Story tells itself. Yeah, but to look at these, and that's one of those that guarantee that there's guys having to go around that in a way that you would not want to be the guy going around it.
Number 10 is a little bit longer bridge. This is 570th down by the Huck Cambridge area. One issue with this bridge, this is probably the narrowest bridge we have in the county. It's a one-lane post bridge, but two cars can't fit in between this truss. We've also had an issue with this stream that's been eroding the road for a number of years. We've had to reinforce this a couple times. But when we get the bridge, we might have to move it a bit south to get that flow through there. And there's been some development in this. This is the road that heads up to the pipeline pumping station, but there's a lot of some newer houses that have gone in just this area, too, that have requested this bridge get replaced. And these trusses, we have about 10, 12 of these left in the county, and there's potential for them to be put on the historic list fairly soon. And there are also the bridges we have to get the special inspection done with the snoopers that go underneath, and that's costly as well. And there's a number of issues why we want to get rid of these trusses when we can, but they're typically longer, so they're more costly, unfortunately.
Yeah, so I would say you got to find a way to get that one done in 19. I mean, putting that one off any for a lot of reasons could cause real trouble.
Number 11 is on E18, intersection of E18 and S14. It's in Drainage District 11. This bridge came up when we were dealing with the DD11 Drainage District meetings a few years back. They felt like this bridge was restricting in some way. So we told them we'd get in the program, and we did. And there's one end in particular that's really starting to deteriorate. We do have load issues. We like our paved roads to be able to take overweight loads. It's illegal, but we have a lot of overweight permits we give out too, and this is a restriction area we always have. They're not able to get through this area with anything over 120,000 pounds or so.
So what would we put in place of that?
More than likely, this would be a twin, possibly a triple box culvert.
Okay.
Next one is Sandhill Trail. This is just south of the intersection of the 260th. We've done some repairs in the past, a couple piling, but we've had a lot of erosion issues about every year on this thing we got to fix. But it's a short one. A load post would be a good one to knock off with a box culvert. Number 13, 675th. Again, it's an old arch structure. The water's actually going underneath this concrete.
Huh.
It's been undercut. But again, this one's on a skew, so until we get the design on this one could end up being a little more costly again, but we'll get that design going. 14 is 645th. Don't have a picture of a few of these next ones. 580th box culvert, Union 28. These are some smaller structures. They've all been in the program in the past. They're just working their way up. Next one I have pictures of is number 18. Sherman 33. It's a typical wood structure. Load posted, 15 tons, fairly low. Number 19 is Palestine 11. This is where I was looking for those bridges on the farm to market route, and this is a little wood bridge. It makes sense to get this replaced with farm to market funds.
Mm-hmm.
Number 20, 220th Street. This is just off of the 13th Street paving by Holub's out there. The bridge isn't in that bad a shape, but we always have issues with erosion in between this box and the bridge. The reason for replacing this would be if we're going to pave it sometime in the future. This needs to be done probably a year or so in advance because we're going to have to build up this grade. We want that all settled out before we would pave that stretch. So this kind of ties into a potential paving project on 220th if we get to that.
Why do we have the box and the bridge right next to each other like that?
I would assume the box was there first. They figured out it was undersized.
So they came in and put a bridge right next to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what would go in there?
That would be a box culvert.
That box.
But the height is so short, we'd have to probably raise the road up to get the box in there. This is just downstream from the 580th one we just
did. I know where you're at. Just want to know how it'd be similar, single or double.
It'd have to have the same hydraulics as that one, which was a double upstream. So it'd be a double twin box.
That's what I'm saying. Is it, you know, what was it double in? Thanks.
Number 22, you can see the under that length column that's carried over, but when it says new in that column, that means it's one that's just newly added. So you see we're in a whole list of ones that were brand new to the program.
Based on our bridge inspections, right?
Yeah, a lot of it had to do with the bridge inspections and the farm to market route. The next three were on the farm to market routes, and we're getting into those bigger structures I was talking about, but it makes sense to start doing some of these with farm to market money.
Yep.
This is the underside of that first one. You can see the concrete's falling out. When you start seeing the steel, that's not good, and you can see light through it. Same on the other side of the bridge. They're just really old structures.
Collins was.
Similar structure also on the Farnham Market route. Been repaired some. It's hard to see in that photo. I had some piling repairs done, but again, it's a longer structure, so it's going to be more costly.
And Collins 7,
number 24, similar issue again, Farm to Market Road, but it's a longer structure, so it's going to be a little more costly. But
number 25, don't have a picture of Grant 10, but that is, Grant 10 is the one by just north of Vetter's.
And that's all based on what the DOT does. If they decide to cut off access, we just need that in our program, so we're ready to go with replacing that before they cut off the access to 590th.
Mm-hmm.
So Better always has access. And 26 is this
so
one.
Is that one that we could go ahead and design and then just kind of sit on it while we wait to see what DOT does?
That's the idea, yeah. And we don't know what Ames is going to do in the future either, if they could annex further. So we'll get it designed so it's ready to go quickly then.
Yeah.
Another farm market on, you see a lot of these are on 730th Avenue because that's a major farm market route north-south in the eastern part of the county, and it has a lot of bridges. But again, we're able to use farm market money to replace that one. Picture of that. The next one's one I commented that's been in the program in the past. It's the major Skunk River Bridge, one of the few high trusses we have left in the county. But it's going to be a costly one. It show $1 million right now. But that's one of our major routes that crosses the interstate, so it is a major route. And I know Conservation has indicated they would like to see this one replaced someday and not ever closed.
You said something about historical designation for bridges like this.
Yeah. We have 4 historic bridges right now, and I'll show you a picture of one later in our kind of our wish list bridges. Once they're designated historic, it's difficult to do anything with it. You almost have to build a road around it. You got to leave it there, or you have to do some major documentation, which we've tried in this other one I'll show you down by Maxwell. We couldn't even get that one taken out with the documentation. We've tried to work with the state for a number of years and hired a consultant to even do it, and they couldn't get that done even. So it just becomes very difficult to even replace the structure once it gets on that list.
Okay.
This one's not on that list.
This one is not.
Thank you.
This is just a comment. I'm going to be looking at more bridges on our pave system for deck overlays to try to extend the life of some of our bridges on the pave system. We don't have any in the program right now, but we did 2 of these last year. Now let's get into the wants list. This is a little different than the pavement. These are more of structures we're considering possible closure more than a want. These are ones we should think about closing. There's only one new one on here, and that's the last one. I'll show you some pictures of that at the end. But the first one is the hole in the wall, we call it. Well, first I want to point out this bridge. The board actually took action to close this one. This is on 248 between Nevada and Colo, just south of Highway 30.
Yep.
And just south of this is the what we call the Hickory Grove Bridge that we replaced after the flooding washed it out.
Yep.
So the board did take action to permanently close this bridge, which saved us a good chunk of probably $800,000. So that's what the rest of these are, is the one to possibly consider closure in the future. The first one's a hole in the wall. This is the Heart of Iowa bike track. Bike path heads through here. This is the longer Skunk River Bridge we have. It's that's looking through what we call the hole in the wall, but the bridge we're talking about is right here. It's a wood bridge. We actually had a discussion. We held a public hearing for possible closure of this road about 2 years ago, and there was public opposition to closing this. But We had some really bad piling. We did do some temporary repairs underneath there, but it is still posted 5 tons, which is very low. And actually, while our bridge inspectors were out there this winter, they watched a school bus go across with kids in it, and it concerned them enough, they called the school directly and said, hey, you need to make sure you're not going over posted bridge with something more than 5 tons. So it does get some use even by a school bus route, unfortunately.
What pathway would they have to take to, if there was no bridge there, what would they have to do? Go back to that Cambridge map and show me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is kind of a cut across. They'd have to go over right here. That heads down to 320th. So it's about 2 miles out of your way to get over and around.
Or you can go right through Cambridge and come across on the blacktop coming out of Cambridge, right? And then come south?
Correct. This is the pavement up here.
Right.
This is gravel.
Come that way. Or if you were south of Cambridge, you would have to go further to the east and come back.
Yeah.
And what residents do we have out there?
There's no homes on the road. These individuals in this area were against it. Trying to remember why they were against it. They just said they still use it a lot.
Yeah, as I recall, they farm the ground right there, right?
They do, but with this, you can't get a lot of farm equipment through that.
I'm surprised a school bus gets through there.
Yeah. But being posted so low, there's a back wall that's kind of tilting in is the concern why it's posted so low, and at some point it's going to go bad. So just keep it on our radar if that's something we should close in the future or not. That I was hoping we were going to go that route from the public hearing, but it just didn't turn out that way. There was more use to it than I thought there was, put it that way.
Well, but the public hearing was to close the road.
Yeah.
This is a conversation to close the bridge. We're not talking about, clearly closing the bridge. We're out of the road.
Right.
But feels like the people that spoke against it, Derek, just help me remember, since Loris and Marty weren't here, the people that spoke against it, we were talking about closing the road and relinquishing it to them, and they didn't have any interest in that.
No. But they indicated they still used it enough to where they didn't want the road closed at all. And most of the farm ground's right here, which
right
can get out that way. I don't see a lot of farm equipment crossing the bridge. So,
But what you just told me about the school bus takes it to a whole new level to me. So now we know that we've got a school bus driving across a bridge that they can't, that we feel like can't accommodate a school bus, but yet we know it. So then in my mind, either we go in and we make the bridge such that it can accommodate it, or we make sure that a school bus is not driving across it anymore. And to me, the way you do that is you close it.
Yep.
So what I'm suggesting is that this conversation on that bridge needs to come to the board sooner rather than later.
Okay. Let's wait for the full bridge inspection report to see if they want to lower the posting or anything at that point, and we can take a look at that again.
Good.
So do you feel that the school district will make sure that the bus continues to divert now?
I would sure hope so. They called them and said they did talk to them directly and indicated their concern. So
okay.
We have no authority to stop them, but
right, but we've got to post it out there, right? So this school bus driver is driving past a sign that says 5 ton, and what is a school bus?
I'd say at least that.
Yeah. The bottom line is a safety issue.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Okay.
The next one is Isaac Walton Bridge. This one here. It'd be good to find it. Picture. I don't have a picture close to that. But what this one is, back to it right there. We had this one designed about 10, 15 years ago, and this is one of those floodplain bridges where I think the end result, we were talking a 500 or 600 foot long bridge here. If you don't know where Isaac Walton Lee is, it's a very lightly used road, and the connection where the bridge is especially doesn't get used a lot. So that's one of our bridges that pretty certain that once the it's got some bad piling. Once they go to a certain level, it'd probably be a permanent closure. It'd be a good idea to have a closure. Otherwise, you're talking to at least $1 million bridge.
So is this the road that runs between 13th Street and Riverside?
No, this is the other Isaac Walton down.
If I pump to it back here, this is S-14. Okay. 295th or 2305, somewhere down there.
Right south of the berry patch. Okay.
There's a number of houses on that stretch, but they can all get out one way or the other pretty easily. A lot of them don't need to cross the bridge.
So closing this bridge would cause potentially a little hardship if you were going directly from one side to the other, but yeah, everybody would still have access everywhere they wanted to go.
Biggest impact probably be on Isaac Walton, because I think they have drives on both sides to get around their park area. I think they also have their own little wood bridge inside the park. It's still there.
The next one is the Skunk River Bridge down by Cambridge.
That's back on the picture. That would be this bridge right here. It's still doing fine, but it's one of those, you know, big long trusses that we replaced this bridge up here about 15 years ago, so that's got a nice brand new bridge. It's kind of a close distance for the county to invest in Skunk River bridges. But there is a co-op down here too that some of this traffic takes. And it is load posted, so some of that traffic probably shouldn't be taking it, but they do. It's not posted real low.
But where's 210 on this?
210's right at the bottom here.
Right there. So that would, if we didn't have any bridge across the Skunk River between 210 and the one that we just replaced up on the northeast side of Cambridge, people could still get.
Yeah, it's just 1 mile. So we'd have 1 mile, 2 miles.
Okay.
Yeah, twin span, another one that could go historic. This is up on the Hamilton County line, number four there. It's just a multiple span bridge, long bridge, gets 20 vehicles a day, but again, there's a couple houses up there. I think they all exit different directions, so the bridge probably isn't all that necessary. And if we did replace it, it would be in cooperation with Hamilton County 50-50, but they don't show an interest at this point in replacing it either. Number five, this is the historic bridge, Marty, I was talking about. This is down in the corner of Maxwell. This is the one we replaced just around the corner. We kind of took our pick. We needed to replace one or the other to get people access to here, so we put a new box culvert in here, but that's the historic one in the background. An old arch. The walls are all knocked off the top, so we put some wood railing and stuff in there, but if you go look at that person, it's in really rough shape. It's hard to rate these bridges, is why they're not posted very much, but a new thing we're required to do is we actually drive a heavy loaded truck over the top to see if it takes it or not. And we did that last.
Does that guy get hazard pay? Whoever you got in there?
I'll tell you what, these old arch structures are very strong, so they almost have to be falling down for them to fail, but this one's getting close to that point.
I think this is the one that made the vein pop out in my head when we started talking about the money we had, the extra money we had to spend here.
Yeah. So we hired a consultant to do a study, and they tried to work with the state to get it replaced, and they're going to make us just build a road around it. And there isn't that much historic significance in this one if you've ever seen it. That's why it was kind of frustrating. Some are, you know, pretty
sure
nice bridges, and this one, it was a lawsuit, a patent issue, long 100 years ago, is why they think it's historic. We've got two or three of them in the county. Two of them are on the historic list, but there's other counties that have them. It's called a Luton Arch. we even paired with another county to try to pool money for that fund to document the bridge, but we just couldn't get it to go.
So now here, this is a curved culvert, right?
This is the new one is here.
Yeah, so it's a curved culvert. How many of those could you put together?
And the reason I ask is one of the early ones we had, you showed me that you had an angle you had to deal with. And I'm sitting here wondering, can we use some kind of curved culvert system to not have to put in as long one as we were talking about?
Up in Lincoln, yeah. Right?
Well, that, I don't remember which one it was.
This application more for when it turns quickly. That one is just straight all the way through. So the curve, it wouldn't save you a lot to curve that as much. This one was fairly caught. We've only got two of these we've curved like this. The other one is on University down just north of the Kelly pavement there.
Okay.
There's, yep. I think that's just a single cell box, but we curved that one as well. But they're fairly costly to so fabricate them that way. So the cost in fabrication, and it wouldn't save you as much on one that is straight.
Okay.
It bends like this. This one comes in straight, and then it bends at the outlet. So that's why we had to do it that way. This is the Ames Water Treatment Plant Road. Just similar bridge to the one down by Cambridge. Again, probably still has some life in it. We don't know of anything major going wrong with it, but it's just getting old. And Ames does have an alternate access, a private road they've built south, so they can get
we
access.
Have to close this down, or we close this road down for a short time?
The small wood bridge that we've replaced with four pipes, okay. That's kind of in the background down here in the floodplain. That brings us to the Squaw Valley Bridge. That would be this one right here. This is the one we're replacing this year. The pavement curves around. This turns to gravel. There's this intersection right here. It's got some real sight distance issues. Even putting a stop sign for southbound doesn't do a lot of good because you still can't see even when you're stopped over this curve. So that's one of the reasons we were thinking about closing this in the future and restricting traffic. We don't really want this to become a throughway. It'd be difficult to improve that sight distance issue. The houses are all built so close. The other issue is the floodplain, of course. Zooming in a little bit further, this whole area is the area that floods and washes all the rock off the road. Seems to be like every other year. That is the width of the floodplain. The bridge is about right here. It extends all the way up. And the light blue is the detailed study area. That means we pretty much don't have a choice. We have to meet or exceed the opening size. And it'd be difficult to raise that bridge any because that would cause you to restrict that whole detailed floodplain. So it'd be a fairly expensive bridge. Even hard to put a number on it until we got into the design quite a ways.
When are they going to be done with the small bridge on 190th?
So we just awarded that bid today.
We haven't heard from Peterson on a schedule yet. Those boxes take a few months to get fabricated and cured out, so it won't be in the next few months. But
so the end of summer.
Yeah, end of summer.
Why, if we were going to close this, why would we ever reopen it? So we're going to close it down while we put in the new box culvert, right? And so everybody's going to have to, in that neighborhood that you were just showing us, is going to have to come in from the west. They're going to use that long bridge. But there's going to be no through traffic while we're putting in that box culvert. So anybody who's trying to go somewhere is going to have to go down to Cameron School Road in order to cross to get all the way through. So people are going to get used to that. So if we were going to close this bridge down and make it a pedestrian, bicycle-only kind of bridge, why wouldn't we do it right at the end of finishing that box culvert? While people are used to not using it.
Just to point that out, when we replace this box here this summer, all this subdivision traffic up here, they're going to have to come down and take gravel, which they might not be used to driving on gravel. They're going to have to take this to get out. Just be aware of that.
Yep.
And then once we get this replaced, then that's what we're going to talk about possibly.
But everybody in the new neighborhood,
while we're replacing that bus culvert, is going to just automatically go down to Cameron School Road. And frankly, when we talk about closing that Squaw Creek Bridge, those are the people that I think we're going to hear the most from if they think they've discovered some shortcut through to Gilbert High School or something like that, that aren't going to be happy.
I was talking to someone who lives up in this area a week ago, I guess it was, and he was talking about more frequent use than on Squaw Valley Road itself and the possibilities. So I said, I'm sure we'll hear from some people from Squaw Valley Drive, I guess that's what it's called, Squaw Valley Drive, for at some point as we're if we talk about closing that bridge permanently. Because then this person who lives up, I think in the subdivision, said, well, then I'm going to go down Squaw Valley Road.
To get to Cameron School Road.
Yeah, to get to Cameron School if he needs to.
Yeah, they got speed humps on Squaw Valley Road now as it is.
Right. So just to point out that access, might be, we may be creating some definitely more traffic, but more dangerous access also. For people who, if they want to get down to Cameron School Road, because they're going through Valley, Squaw Valley Drive. Just wanted to bring it up.
Yeah. No, we need to consider all of it. I don't think it's $1 million bridge is my problem. I think it's substantially more than $1 million. By the time you deal with the floodplain you got to deal with out there to replace that long.
Okay. And the other issue to consider here is there's concern if we close this bridge or this stretch of road, the flood control, this road does back water up, it controls the flooding downstream. So if the county vacated it, it would go back to private property owners, so technically they could take the road out, which could open that area up more. So if we could have a couple options, we just close the bridge, which would cut off the access, but we'd still keep the road under county control. But then down the road when it floods and washes out, we generally don't lose a ton of the road. We lose the gravel on the top. It starts to eat away at the downstream side, but we're able to repair that fairly easily. But at some point, the whole road could get washed out, but we'd have to commit ourselves to keep repairing that just for flood control issues.
Well, we need to talk. If we were to go down that road, and I think we're 100% right, we need to make sure we have full conversations about what those ramifications might be and who it impacts. But we need to have, if we were to do that, we need to have a conversation with Prairie Rivers and the Squaw Creek Watershed Authority, because then it would almost, rather than being a roadway, it would become more of a flood control is the wrong word, but it would definitely have some kind of impact on high water events. When I look at that corridor, so looking all the way, which a lot of this, and Leanne, you've been out in meetings on this, I look at that whole corridor right there, and what I see when I look at that whole corridor is that is potential wetland that has just not been developed as it should be yet.
For me, it's the safety concerns. This hill and the hills and sight distance all the way through this area, we're going to be where we already did this past year, lower that speed limit way down to 25. To make that a through route for all this new subdivision area, I'd be hesitant.
Well, if it's
going to
be a through route, the whole thing needs to be paved.
Right.
And we probably need to look at going all the way over to County Line Road. Hey, I mean, you know, I'm just saying if it's going to truly be a throughway, then it needs to be a throughway, and if it doesn't, then we don't need a bridge there.
And I guess the other thing as we discuss this, I think this will take a lot of discussion, but even becoming a throughway all the way to county line, if I agree it would have to be, because otherwise as people are routing themselves through regardless, they're going to feed themselves into North Dakota more.
Sure.
If they're coming down on Squaw Valley or Drive and rather than going over to George Washington Carver. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I agree. This one's going to need a lot of input and a lot of planning. And
all I'm suggesting, and I'm all in on that, Morris, but it needs to happen sooner
right.
rather than later.
That was where I was headed.
Yeah.
Was.
And then the last one I want to discuss is a new issue. This is a zoomed out picture. I'll point to the map behind me here where this is. Here's Maxwell. This is almost down to the Polk County line right here.
Yep.
Here's the issue right here. For some reason, that is a county road right there. Just that stub. We got a bridge right there. Zoom in. This is a newer, these buildings are brand new. This house has been here, I don't know, 10 years or so. Nice house back there. This is their driveway, but it is a county road, unfortunately. I don't know how it ended up that way. We need to do some grading work out here, first of all. You can see it's wet on this side, but that water's running down here. It's difficult to see, but that's a square, solid cap. Usually we don't have issues with those, but it is completely bowed out. It's so rotten. This is one that our bridge inspectors contacted us on right away. We had to get it wasn't posted at all. We had to get it load posted anyway. So, 3-span bridge, pretty good sized bridge. We cost it to replace, but landowner is going to have issues if we close that. So do we spend $300,000-$400,000 on a bridge that is a driveway to one person? Right now, I don't have what we posted it down to. It wasn't real low, but they're still able to use it. It's got some major machine sheds back here, so I don't know what he's taking in and out, if it's heavy at all, but right now it's probably not an issue for him. But the way that cap looked, it could be an issue in the near future, so something we're going to have to keep an eye on. But for now, it's load posted, and I haven't heard anything from the landlord since we posted it a couple weeks ago.
I'm here, and I know it's not your bailiwick, but maybe Leanne can insight or something. How did they get approval to build? Or did they need approval to build from us if they had enough acres?
I was looking at historic photos, and there was a farmstead on the... You see that lot right there. There was a farmstead on the north side, historically. So there was something there in the past.
All right. Thank you.
Who owns all this ground? Does the same owner own all of this?
I don't believe so.
What road is that?
Mount. I don't know if... North Sandra Hunter lives at the Christmas tree farm right here. This is 6 Peoria Church Road. I can't zoom out any further. But this, yeah. This connects into pavement in Polk County. They paved up to the Story County line, the pavement stops. But
you butt up on 27 and 14.
There's a bale storage site here for the ethanol plant. If you've been down to that one. But
so I guess, Darren, what I would want to know here is legally what our options are. It doesn't seem to be that you have a whole bunch. I would want to know if the load posting eliminates the ability of first responders to get in there if there's an emergency, because it doesn't look like there's any other access. I mean, this is the sole access point. And again, I don't think we have a whole lot of authority to do much of anything other than work with this
landowner or these landowners, depending on who all owns that, to look at vacating the road and it being their responsibility. But I know I would be really hesitant to agree to that if I was that landowner.
Yeah, to take on that bridge.
You hate spending $500,000 for a driveway, for a private driveway, but that's in essence what we're...
Yeah, and another... I know other counties in similar situations have done low water crossings. They bring it down with concrete and put some pipes, and then the water flows over the driveway. That's a floodplain issue, too. But it's a possibility.
Well, but then they've got no way in or out anytime the water's out.
Yes, that's a
problem. Missouri Bridge. So they call them. No farmers call that Missouri Bridge.
Yeah, but and that's great if that.
I'm
was,
just saying that's just yeah, it is.
I know it's a thing.
It exists, but it's just.
But you got to have another way. You got to have another way in or out.
Yeah.
Since at some point the county said this was a county road, it's hard to back out of that.
I'll double check on that, but I don't think it's a crisis right now, but it could come up fairly soon.
Okay.
Lastly, that was the last one on the bridge warrant.
I wanted to touch real quick on gravel and rock, how it comes into play here with the program discussion is we can use farm-to-market money on gravel if we put it on the farm to market system.
Right.
I just want to make you aware that's an option. And I ran some quick numbers to give you an idea of cost. If we put 1,000 tons per mile on a gravel road, that's about 1.5 inches thick for that entire stretch. To put 1,000 tons on our 706 miles costs us $7 million just for the material cost only. It doesn't include hauling. You can just about double that to include the hauling. What we currently do is we put 250 tons per mile when we re-rock our roads.
And we only do a quarter a year.
And a quarter of a year.
Quarter of that number, 706.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, quarter of 706. But if we rock the entire county in 1 year, that's what it would cost for doing it 250 tons per mile, which is what we do.
So what would the 1,000 tons a mile give us that 250 doesn't?
Well,
that, I mean, those are no
good. Yeah.
You're telling me that what we do. Now, why did you pick 1,000?
1,000 is just a round number. Generally, we probably wouldn't want to put quite that much on a road unless it was a brand new road and the grade was really soft. When we're re-rocking, 250 seems to work. When I was out in Jones County, rock was very abundant out there. We had multiple pits to bid from. We did 450 tons per mile out there. Just giving you some options on what certain options would cost.
As I'm trying to learn more about roads, one of the comments that was made to me when I was out driving around about what I was not aware there are different sizes of gravel and rock. I thought it was all just one size or, you know. So are there preferred kind of thicknesses of the rock or gravel itself or sizes? I don't even know how you measure that.
Our total rock contracts, we use the inch road stone. So you got about inch size rock, but then there's a lot of fines that bind that together. You can get 1.5 inches. We tried that 1 year with our rock contract. That you'd be surprised going from 1 inch to 1.5 inches how big a difference it is on the road. It's pretty good sized rock. We just happened to hit a really dry spring when we tried to put that big rock down the road, and it was like marbles. So we kind of changed practice on that real quick. So that the inch roadstone is what we typically use. We get a really bad spring with frost boils. You'll learn what those are here. Hopefully not this spring. I'm hoping for a good spring. I'm thinking it's looking pretty good so far. Could get lucky there. But when we have frost boils, there isn't much you can do on those other than dig the entire road out, which we don't do. So that's where you can actually buy 3-inch clean rock, and we put it in that. That's a last resort just to get people access through a mud hole. But those are some of the
the rock options, and then we also use gravel, which is the natural stone riverbed, river rock type stuff, but it has a lot of sand mixed in it. So if you ever get a call, why the county dumping sand on the gravel roads, it's our gravel. It has a lot of crushed gravel in there, and the sand kind of binds it. And there's clay in that sand that binds the road together. Without the clay, it would be loose all the time. But in general, that's our rock options.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So do you think 250 tons is not enough for my...
No, I think that's a pretty good number. You could go... Actually, our guys did some in Indian Creek South here. They did some 400 to 500 stretches, and it got a little loose.
Yeah, that would be my fear.
Yeah, there is roads that could handle that much rock though too. But 250 is a good average for us to use. The 1,000 kind of came from what would happen if you put an inch and a half thick on that entire mile. Is kind of where that number came from.
But you look at each road, stretch a road, has its own set of circumstances, and you just blanket and apply.
For the most
of these roads truly do have their own stories.
When we do the contract hauling, that's pretty much a blanket. But then we have our crews. They're doing a lot of spot rock hauling to the bad spots.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a combination of both. We do have some individual from the public. It's pretty rare now with getting rid of most of those problem areas, but we got individuals that demand a certain type on a certain mile, and we try to accommodate that when we can.
Really?
That's
a nice perk.
Yeah.
About that.
Squeaky wheel gets the oil.
Yeah.
I've heard you say a couple times that we're trying to move toward more toward hauling all the rock ourselves. We're not there yet. Clearly, I think I just saw what the latest number, we were spending an extra $400,000 or something
to
do the contract hauling. How close are we to being able to haul our own rock, and what's the most we can handle in hauling our own rock?
I say this year is going to be a big test. We had a safety meeting last week, and I told the guys after it, this middle of June, we can start hauling for next fiscal year because we don't get that bill for 2 weeks. We're going to start hauling as hard as we can middle of June and see how much we can get done this next fiscal. We won't quite have that third pup in place yet, but it'll be a pretty close estimate till we get that. So I think this next year will be the year to see how much we can really do in-house.
So we'll haul it and put it straight on the roads, or will we haul it and stockpile it?
No, we'll put it straight on the roads. We generally don't ever stockpile limestone.
Okay.
So we are getting rock from where?
So when I talk rock, that's all Mark Marietta rock out of the
Ames mine. Ames, sir.
Yep, that's really our only option.
So we don't go to Marshall County, we don't go to Boone County?
For gravel, we do.
Okay.
For the mines that are one just into Marshall County, and there's one just into Boone County. The Boone County one, we're going to be hauling out of that one this spring because we have a pile that we've already paid for there. They need us to move that so they can keep producing. That material is not quite as good as the Marshall County rock, and that side's much closer to Martin Marietta, so I think we're going to stop hauling out of gravel out of the Boone pit just for those two reasons.
Okay.
We're not sure if the Marshall County has any more available. I think that pit's just about exhausted.
What is Martin and Marianne doing at the corner of 35 and 30? What are they calling?
That is, we buy our snow and ice control sand from there.
They're pulling most sand out.
Yeah, that's graded so we can put it on roads without bigger rocks and stuff in it. And they do have some rock piles, but we're paying $450 a ton for our gravel. They want $20-$25 a ton for that rock.
Wow.
It's pure rock.
But easy math.
Yeah, but it's not mixed with anything, so it's not typically stuff we put on the roads anyway. But
so I'd like us to run our experiment this summer and see if we're going to be able to truly take all hauling in-house.
And if we get Dave all hauling in-house, then I'm going to be very interested in having the conversation of, do we want to go from a quarter of the county every year, so hitting everything once every 4 years, to move into more like a third of the county every year, so we're hitting everything every 3 years. But really determining where's that line where we can do it in-house, and is it worth the extra cost to us to have it hauled versus what we'll pay to do it, put on ourselves.
Sure. So the point of this discussion right now is mainly just to let you know you can use farm market money if you put the rock on a farm market road. I think it's been 25 years since the county's ever done that, but it's an option.
What would make you want to choose that right now? If you're not, you're saying you haven't done it, why would you choose it now?
I was really looking at it a few years ago when local money was so tight. That would free up some more of our local money.
Mm-hmm.
But right now with the extra fuel tax and we need to bring our local balance down some, it's probably not as big an issue for me right now as it has been in the past.
That's a good thing, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I would say local dollars being tighter, if that farm-to-market money is growing to the point that you don't have the need to use it on roads and bridges.
Right.
But I don't see us doing that.
Not right now. So, probably not a good time. A couple more things. This is the farm market map. It's hard to see on this, but we went over that already. That's the farm market system. And lastly, this is the important sheet. I gave you a copy of that. That's our balances and our special funds, farm market, STP, and BR. On the left side are the revenues shown in yellow. Farm to market comes in quarterly. That's why you see $320,000 coming in each year. STP and BR are federal funds that come in pretty much once a year. The middle is the expenditures. That's the money coming out of those funds. And then over on the right-hand side are the are balances for each of those funds, FM, STP, and BRS.
And we are allowed to spend into the negative on those. Or what was the regulation there?
The federal side, like you said, with the fiscal constraint, it's, we used to be able to borrow 3 years ahead on the bridge funds, but you really can't now with those restraints. Farm market, you can get about the same, about 3 years ahead.
Okay. We don't typically do that, but if you have one big project, occasionally mm-hmm. you can dip into the negative.
And that varies. There's rules we follow, but if they see the balance getting low in a certain area, they'll change the rules on how far you can borrow ahead. So that's kind of a moving target, but there's nothing wrong with borrowing ahead. But you can see the balances and everything that's in the program out of those three funds is in the expenditures column, so you can see our balances on the right. By the end of the fifth year, January 22 year, you can see there's a little bit of balance in each one of those. It's not a lot. And just keep in mind with the road funding in particular, there's not a lot of extra road money. We need to keep maintaining our system. So while it might look like we have a lot on paper, it comes in cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And we hit that issue back in 2007, we had a road, S-27 south of McCallsburg, that kind of fell apart, and we had no money. So that's when we had the bond for $7.4 million.
How long ago was that?
That was in 2008 we bonded that.
Wow.
So the McCallsburg road was not that entire $7-plus million, though, right?
No, we were able to reconstruct the north part of our 38 reconstruction. We did 13th Street reconstruction. And we had to tie that to the wind farm because you had to do it, had to be some business tie to it, economic development. So it was tied to the wind farm because that's right where the Carlsberg Road issue was, where all the wind turbines were going.
Right.
Where was, when you sit there and say that we just lived recently in times where we passed the gas tax, was your farm market allocations always the same or have they gone up?
We, additional 600,000 local and about additional 200,000 into the farm to market account.
Yearly?
Yes.
Okay.
that's up to about, that's 1.2 million now. We were
about a million a year before.
Okay. Thank you.
That's the overview. I just wanted to get everything in front of you at this point so you have time to digest all this. But if you have any questions about anything I presented, you can let me know now. But the plan is to have another meeting late March, discuss this again, and then by April 15th, we have to have official board action approving the five-year program.
Is there anywhere we can get in a large farm-to-market map?
Sure.
Please.
Okay, so a couple things that I'd ask for our next discussion. It seems to me, and I really appreciate the resurfacing, I appreciate you showing us how much of the concrete and how much of the asphalt we need to be doing on an annual basis. I think it's really important that we try really hard to hit those marks. I know a few years ago we weren't getting anywhere close, and now at least it feels like we're getting close. Let's try to go ahead and hit those. As far as new paving projects, what I've heard come out of our conversation today for possible inclusion on our five-year calendar, not saying that they will be included, not saying that there aren't other worthy projects, but I've heard of three projects that we need to discuss as part of our five-year new projects. And that would be, I'm combining two into one when I say 560th into Huxley. So that's from the Polk County line all the way up to First Street into Huxley. This is in no particular order, by the way. We need to have that conversation down the road. 13th Street over to 600, out of Ames over to 600th needs to be in our calculation. And then, again, I'm combining this into one project, although it'll only be one. It won't be both that I can see. Either University all the way south to the Kelly Blacktop, or 260th all the way west over to R38. One of those two projects. Those are the three new ones that I heard as part of the five-year calendar. I know there's some discussion about 600th all the way, building a new road all the way north. I think we need to continue to have that conversation. Just for me, I don't see it as part of our new five-year
calendar. No, absolutely not. I would probably point you to 250th pavement there south of Nevada, but that's on hold right at the moment. I mean, we have the embarrassment of growth potential going forward, and I think that's what's driving these conversations, and you almost have to pick and hope that you're right.
So I want to back up, because you talked about University South to 260th.
We're already doing that.
That was already done.
Think of the corner of 260th, you're doing one of two things for us.
Either R38.
Either over 260th over R38, or continue straight south
to Kelly.
Okay, thank you.
So, Darren, that would be the three that I'd want us to be able to talk about, actually fitting in date certain somewhere on the five-year calendar, maybe, with those three at some point. And then bridges, I didn't have anything specific on the bridges, but I would say this. I said it as we were going through. I'd like you guys to find one that you can pull up into FY18, and I'd like you to find two that are not currently in the FY19 schedule that you can pull up into FY19. I'm not nearly as worried about what 2021 and 22 looks like. We need to get things on the list. But every time we have a bridge inspection, things are going to shuffle around a little bit. I just want to try to make sure that we're accommodating whatever we can as soon as we can. And so I'd leave it to you guys to tell me from a priority standpoint and from a reality, can we design it, get it led, and get it built in time to get it done? And then, Darren, it falls to the three of us up here to figure out how we're going to get paid for it.
Right.
Okay.
Darren, and I may be off on this, but within the last maybe 4 or 5 months, did you bring to the board, either the previous board or us very early, kind of a workflow chart about what has to go through, what you go through from the moment that you say, okay, it's time to go ahead and do this project or look at this?
Oh, for the lettings? For the ones we let through the DOT, there is a schedule we have to meet, and that's, I want to get, of all the projects, I want to make sure there was support right now for 530th or University Avenue paving south to 260th, because we're starting to meet some of those steps we got to meet with the DOT. If there was opposition, I kind of want to hear that now. But if there isn't, we'll continue to move forward like we have been. But yeah, there's a schedule. I can bring that next time and show you.
Well, or it may be something. Maybe I could come down or come over and spend an hour with you.
Sure.
Very beneficial to walk through that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Anything else for us today? We've got a staff meeting in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'd just like to, the Roland and Kelly maintenance buildings were originally on this update.
Let's do that.
And I heard a couple times in board meetings reference to something about the Kelly contract or the contract with ISU.
Kelly is ISU ground. Do we have a picture of Kelly up there? Anyway, feels like you had one when we were talking about the. So when we closed the Slater shed, Darren decided that somewhere between the Slater Huxley kind of line and Ames, we needed to have a shed to service that part of the county. What we're doing right now outside of Ames is not working. And so we started looking, we looked for property all over the place, including over on 69. I mean, it feels like there's property all over the place. We had a couple places that wanted to sell us property at a ridiculously high amount, at least I thought a ridiculously high amount, and ended up coming to an agreement with Iowa State University. They own right at the Kelly Forum, right there at R38 and the blacktop that goes into Kelly. And they agreed to donate that land to us. And we still don't have a signed contract that I'm aware of. Actually, I'll make sure I hit Jessica with that as far as our staff meeting or just before our staff meeting, where we are in that. And that's been the holdup at this point on that one. Now, the Roland shed, which is the same shed, we're talking about building the same shed both places, and it should be big enough to accommodate all the equipment and any storage that we need. We're not going to go halfway on that. We already have the ground for that one, so that one's a little easier to think about getting done.
Okay. And so, since we do have this other staff meeting, but I'll talk to you more about it. I have more questions about this.
Darren, fill us in the rest of the way. Where else are we on these two?
The other one is being Roland, and once we get to the point we want to move forward with them, we'll probably need to hire an architect or a consultant to design these sites to get the building up, at least the shell of it. We talked about finishing the inside with our own crews in the winters. We'll point out, once we build the Roland shed, we'll probably eliminate the Story City shed, and just received a call last week from Mark Jackson, who would have interest in that building if we do get rid of it, so we need to keep that in mind.
So the sheds will all be one design, is that correct? The four of them, you'll use one kind of boilerplate design?
Not necessarily. The Kelly shed might be at least one stall bigger, just on the needs we have in the area, how many motor graders are going to come out of it. And
okay.
We haven't really got to the point of getting to that kind of detail yet. We get there pretty soon, I think.
Okay, thanks.
Kelly, we pretty well narrowed that down to four. Not exactly sure on the roll and if we need three or four.
And they'll be bigger. Since I looked into the Ames chat and went, whoa, I couldn't move in between. That's pretty tight fitting in there.
Yes.
So, okay. All right. Thanks.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope.
Darren, anything else for us today?
That's all I have.
All right. Thank you.